Blog Talk Radio.
I am immortal, I'll never fade away. I'm a legacy that lives beyond, far beyond the grave. I am immortal, I'll never rest in peace. And you're never gonna be, never gonna be, never be.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Terrify Radio. I don't know what's going on.
I pressed play on my station identification, so if it goes off, we'll just have to deal with it. My internet's being a little bit slow right now. Welcome, everybody. This is Terrify Radio, and I'm the Mouse from the South, the Paranormal Outlaw. And joining me tonight is Miss Tasha Starr and guest co-host CPR Matt. What's up, guys?
Hey! Oh, God, we're having the party again.
Oh.
Yes, yes, we are.
Okay. But, yeah, Melissa won't be with us tonight. One of her horses is really sick, so she's trying to deal with that and got to take it to the vet in the morning. So she won't be on tonight, but she'll be back next week.
That is one thing you will never hear me say.
What's that?
Is that I can't make the show because my horses are sick.
Well, you know, that's what they do down, you know, in some of the other states. I mean, of course, Melissa's in Virginia. Tasha's over in Kentucky. And I'm way down south in the big state of Texas. And Matt, he's the lone wolf up in Chicago, Illinois.
I am the only non-Southerner that's on the network, I believe.
Oh, man.
But with that said, I was born and raised in Houston, Texas, so I guess that's how I can snake my way into it.
There you go. Well, we have a great show in store for everyone tonight. Our guest is Tim Miley, and I'm going to read his bio real quick. We already have him on hold, so we'll go ahead and get to it. So here we go. Tim, in January of 2008, Tim helped found Fox City's paranormal team, and he cannot believe how far they have come as a group. This journey all started when Tim bought a home in Oshkosh, back in October of 2006. Within weeks, he was experiencing footsteps, voices, and shadows. Tim tried to contact teams in his area. His hope was to get some answers about his home. In the last 5 years, Tim has had the good fortune to meet many great people in this field. Tim has been part of hosting 3 paranormal conferences, been interviewed on numerous radio programs, and has also spoken at many paranormal conferences. Tim's topic when he speaks is obligation to the client, residential investigation. In 2013, one of his team investigations was featured on Sci-Fi's Paranormal Witness entitled The Innocent. In addition, Tim has started a foundation called Paltographs. Kind of like for photographs, paltographs for pooches. At each and every of one of Tim's speaking appearances, he signs 8x10s of himself and his dog Murray. Those photos are $10, and all proceeds go to an animal shelter in the area of the event. Starting in 2014, photographers. I can't even speak tonight. For Pooch's T-shirts will be also available for purchase. Yeah. Tim also will be selling his first book entitled All Roads Lead to the Paranormal. A portion of the sales from the book will be donated to the Brain Trauma Foundation in honor of Tim's father. Just announced, Tim will be a member of the cast of The Hunt this spring, in the spring of 2015. Tim will be joining Scott Timperman, Scotty Rorick, Todd Arnold, and Patrick Burns on the groundbreaking web series Investigations. It's about investigations that go from the start, from the research, all the way to the reveal. There will be no producers. So this is exactly what goes on in a paranormal investigation. So let's bring Tim on now. Tim, you with us?
I'm with you. I've never had anybody have so much trouble with photographs before. But
photographs. Yeah, you never know with my speaking what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I know that for a fact. Anyway.
So, Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I told you guys before we went on air, you know, obviously nobody heard it then, but for about the last five or six days, I've been kind of out of commission and had one of them September illnesses, which is always really fun when you see it still nice outside and you can't do anything about it because you're stuck on the couch and you can't move. But things are going good. I'm getting over it, but I might have, you know, a little bit of a scratchy throat here as we go on, so I apologize if I'm coughing.
Oh, that's okay.
I
a lot of stuff going around
time.
In the air.
Oh, my God, I lost my phone charger. Okay, go ahead.
So we have Tasha for we have Tasha for all of 10 minutes before her phone dies.
Right.
You see what happened? I'm like, what happened? I was plugging in my phone charger. It's going to die. Just like I'm dying inside. I'm just playing. Anyway, there's some comedy in there.
So, Tim, you got a, you know, got a pretty interesting way of, everybody has their own way of how they got into this field, you know. And you actually, first off the bat, were a client. You reached out to some paranormal teams because of a home that you had bought.
The reason I got into the field is because I never was a client. I tried to contact other teams, and nobody got back to me. So it was kind of on me. I had to research and educate myself, and at that point, it was all about, you know, being comfortable in my home. It wasn't about helping anybody else at that point. It was a pretty selfish reason that I started reading up on the subject of the paranormal. And I would say after like 6 months of reading everything I could and watching everything I could, it kind of a light bulb went off. And I thought to myself, well, there's got to be other people out there that these teams aren't answering. And lo and behold, there was. In January 2008, I founded the group. And like I said in the bio, if I'd have known you're going to read the whole bio, I'd have shortened it up for you a little bit. But it was kind of by dumb luck, really. And I'm thankful every day that it happened. If somebody had answered my email and came in here and told me, you know, hey, this is what's happening, I may not have been so driven to learn about the field and get to the point we're at now and being able to help those people that need it.
Exactly.
I went to the same thing. I know, you know what I'm talking about. But when I went up to Bobby Mackey, out of nowhere, I really didn't even, get into the ghost hunting until then. I was like, whoa, okay. And ever since then, it just keeps on and it builds every single day on me. I don't know. If anybody knows
Tim,
about that.
Tim, is that the house that you and Amy bought?
Amy wasn't in the picture at that time. I bought the home in 2006. I didn't meet Amy. We didn't start dating until about 2011, sorry. Had my years mixed up there. I bought the home by myself. And actually, I was supposed to be living with my ex-fiance, and that didn't work out, and that turned out to be a very good thing too, but moving into this house and buying this house and having the activity, everything happens for a reason, I guess. And there was a reason I bought this house. There was a reason that things happened the way they did. And looking back on it, I wouldn't change anything really.
Honestly, Kevin and Tasha, I know you haven't had the pleasure of actually meeting Tim, but I met Tim in person at Fox City's Paracon up in, that was Appleton, right?
Yeah, that was in Appleton.
Just to be honest, I know it says it, and just from all the events and everything that you guys have done, but on a personal level, as far as professionalism, thoroughness, just everything, I've always been hats off to you guys. I mean, you're not the oh, look at that orb kind of people. Your house has demons in it. It's actually a quite thorough, a very, very in-depth process that you guys go through, and I've always had a lot of respect for your team and everybody involved, all the people that you guys associate with, too, in the Fox Cities area. I know there's some bad apples. And you guys have done due diligence to be like, yeah, we don't associate with them. That's just, I mean, it is all about the client for you guys, and that's the way that it should be. So always and forever, hats off to you guys, and keep doing what you're doing. Plus, on a personal level, you guys are fun as hell to hang out with.
Well, I certainly appreciate all the kind words. And honestly, when you have the respect of your peers, that's right up there for me with integrity of your team. If you don't have those two things, then you really don't have a whole lot, honestly. And I've been lucky enough in this field to develop some great friendships and have the help and the guidance of those people and the team, you know, for the last, you know, we're going on 7 years now, which is amazing to me. But, you know, there's a lot of work that those people have put into this team and made us what we are. And I seem to get all the credit, but anytime I can, I try to deflect it a little bit and explain that, you know, I couldn't have gotten here by myself. But as far as, you know, being fun to hang out with, it was a great party last year. It really was. It almost cost me my house, so that's why we're not doing it anymore. But it really was a good time. But we moved it to a bigger venue and a bigger city, and we were really hoping that the support would have been there. We had a lot of people there for the event, but we, you know, our philosophy would go big or go home, and we went too big, and the mortgage company got mad at me because, well, we won't go into that in detail, but things are good now. But yeah, the Paracon business is not for me. I enjoy going to other people's events. It's a lot less stressful.
Well, I'll put in a phone call to Scott, because apparently after selling all of his things out of his room, he didn't give you a cut of the $3,000 profit on the ironing board and the $650 coffee maker.
I got to tell you, it was the first time I met Scott Grunewald, and I had talked to him many times.
God, I know him too.
And he even filled in for me on radio shows when I couldn't make it, when I used to host a show. Scott's a great guy. I love the guy so much. And it was the first time I ever met him face-to-face. And just being around him, you cannot help but be happy. You cannot help but laugh. And if you're lucky enough to get him to be serious at any point during the time you're with him, he's also a very smart man. And he doesn't always show that side of it. He's all about making people laugh and making people have fun. And I think that's why we get along so well. But, yeah, I love that guy so much. I really do.
Yeah, and Tasha and Kevin, what I'm talking about is Scott had his booth set up at Fox Cities. He took the ironing board, he took the coffee maker, he took the iron, he took a couple other things, I can't remember what it was, but out of his hotel room and set them up next to his booth for sale as haunted items for like $3,000 for an ironing board, $650 for the coffee maker. He took the ironing board and the iron, went out in the street, set it up in the middle of the street, and was asking cars when they stopped at the stoplight if they needed anything ironed.
Oh my God, I can see that. I can actually picture that, seriously.
And I should add that the app was playing right along. We were enjoying the hell out of it. And I was getting a little bit worried because he was going over the top, But I asked the hotel manager, and she said, no, this is a great time. Let him go. Let him go.
Oh, man.
If you and Amy are around in November, come down for Chicago Ghost Conference. It's the weekend before the 20th, 21st, 22nd. Scott's going to be in Chicago at Chicago Ghost Conference presenting, too. So if you guys want to come down, I'll get you free tickets, all that stuff.
I'll have to check into it because originally I thought it was a different weekend and I thought I had to work. So I already got the invite to go down there, but I had to decline because my work schedule stinks. Every 4 weeks I have to work the whole weekend on night shift, so there's nothing I can do about it. And I miss out on a lot of stuff. But yeah, I wish I could get down and see everybody. It's, you know, it kind of sucks.
All right, I've got to put it in here. Is anybody going to come down for Scarefest this weekend?
My wife will be there. I'm heading up to Winnipeg.
Oh, man, that's going to rock. I've got my own booth. I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm, like, having panic attacks every day now. I don't know what to do. This is my first conference I've ever done.
It's a lot of partying.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we got to work during the daytime, it's late time at night.
Tim, what I find interesting about you guys are you focused on, you know, residential cases. And you even talk about it when you go to, you know, conferences, which is a good thing because, you know, there's a lot of teams in the field that it seems like their priorities are focused on other things, whether it is just to investigate haunted locations, you know, those kind of things, instead of really kind of focusing in on these people that really need our help, you know. And some of them, and my team has had this happen a lot before, is we get called in as the second team because the first team started up, left the client hanging without any kind of, you know, idea of what to do, and we have to go in there and kind of clean up the mess, per se. So that's good that you guys go in. Have you had those kind of cases where you guys have had to kind of go in and clean up a mess that someone else that didn't really know how to do a residential case?
What they were doing.
Yeah.
Far too many times, honestly. I can think of one that stands out, and I'll relay the story real quickly. But we were the third team called into a home about 20 minutes from here, and they had actually abandoned their home. They left because the last team that investigated their home had the nerve to tell their 9-year-old boy that he had a demon inside of him and that everything in the house that was happening was his fault.
Awesome.
Absolutely unbelievable. We went into the house and did two full investigations, and the other teams were complaining they were getting scratched and hit and all these horrible, horrible things that were happening, and we enjoyed 12 quiet hours in the house. We did get one audio clip that the client ultimately recognized as her brother, and we were able to kind of ease her fears and explain to her that not all paranormal teams are created equally. And I'm happy to say they ended up moving back into the house. And, you know, just a rewarding end to something that family should not have had to deal with. And that's one of the reasons I speak about the topic that I do at these conventions, because, you know, like you said, a lot of people get into this and it's just a fun thing and they go around to these locations and they get known in their area, but in all honesty, they have no business doing an investigation at their home.
Exactly. They don't know what they're doing.
And then when they get the notoriety
it's all fun and games at first, but then it's like, uh-oh, seriously, I've been there. And that's why I'm going to be doing, like, seminars at Scarefest, speaking in front of people. This is no joke. I mean, okay, fine. But don't go out and, like, provoke the evil spirit. Seriously. I mean, let them rest just a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, and they don't do their research because, you know, when it comes to clients, first off, you know, there's teams out there that kind of close themselves off from the field. They kind of keep within themselves. They hold on to their evidence. They really don't reach out to people outside the field, you know, that may or may not have more years of experience and share. You know, it's all about networking when it comes to really delving into the paranormal, because none of us are experts. We all have our experiences. We all have different theories on things that are going on. And and the only way you can kind of learn is talk to people in the field. And that's one reason why I got into doing radio. It's a way for me to connect to other people in the field and learn from them, and hopefully they learn from me. And when it comes to residential cases, you know, you got to do your research. You got to read up on things. I mean, I know of a case that we had where, because we've dealt with some really nasty malevolent spirits. We've been with some really nasty inhuman spirits. But one case in particular, it had all the signs and signals that it could possibly be some kind of demonic type spirit. But I also did some research on it, and I brought some outside help in, some of my friends out in the field in different parts of the United States, get their opinion on things. And we came to the conclusion, and what it was Native American. But the way the spirit was acting, the way the spirit was acting in the home and interacting with one of the children, and partially taking over their body at times, which we found out later that child actually has psychic ability. So that's what was going on. It wasn't really a possession per se. The child was actually channeling. But any other team would have gone in and said, "Oh my God, it's a demon," you know, that kind of thing. And this case was not anything like that. You know, and we found the actual truth of what was going on. We helped the clients, and now they're not having any problems. And we've actually gotten help to the child, you know, with other psychics that help mentor kids with gifts. And so we solved that case, and I felt really good because of the fact that we didn't jump the gun on anything, you know.
Yeah. And see, like, kids with, like, special gifts, I'll just say autism, like my son, he can pick up on that stuff. I mean, pretty much at the same time I can, but I've learned how to channel my gift, you know, like later on in life. And he's sitting there, he's 6 years old. I'm like, what? He's sitting there telling me stuff. I'm like, oh, Lord, he's thinking the same thing as I am. It's not per se that, like, you know, spirits are around, but something's going to happen. It's more like that.
Right.
And I can't explain it.
Now, Tim, with your you guys and dealing with clients, explain to some of the folks out there that, I mean, I know it's a real in-depth process, but you can kind of sum it up. What kind of some of the things that you guys do with the clients? When somebody calls, what's y'all's protocol? What do y'all do?
The initial interview is very important, obviously, you know, to get to know them and, you know, get to know the situation that they're going through and hear all the claims. I think I'm different from some of the teams around. From where I came from and not being able to get anybody to take me seriously, I don't ever turn the case away. So I've never done a client interview and at the end said, you know what, I don't think this is worth the time. I don't think there's anything here. Because at the very least, if you can find logical reasons for the things that are happening, you know, that's helping them too. That's giving them peace of mind. So the initial interview, you know, it's very important to getting to know the person. You know, beyond that, you know, the walk through the home, and I don't know if we're any different than other teams, but I like to actually have one or two of the clients and the homeowners at the home during the investigation. And mainly that's because I don't feel comfortable telling somebody that I just met that I'm going to be in their house all night and be there. So we find a central location for them, and they sit with one of our team members, and we make sure whoever they're with can answer any questions that they have. And really, during our investigations, it's all about the comfort of the client. You know, that's the number one goal, is to keep them comfortable through the evening and, you know, ultimately, you know, try to answer any questions that they have and get to the bottom of what's going on at home. But I don't think we're a whole lot different from other teams that do residential investigations. It just, I think the residential cases may mean more to me than other teams. I'm not trying to sound arrogant about it, but it's just where I came from, you know, and not being able to get the help and, you know, knowing what those people are going through, and they're just looking for answers. So I try to be as in-depth as I can and as hopeful as I can be.
Right.
Well, I'm going to get one good question. Can I ask one question real quick. What do you actually think, Tim, about these ghost shows they put on TV?
Well, I used to be the guy that would thump my chest and tell everybody that these were all horrible, but then I got to know some of the guys and some of the girls around the shows, and you know, one of my best friends in the world is Scott Tepperman, and he was on Ghost Hunters International, I think, for 2 or 3 seasons. But the one thing I should say is the shows are entertainment. If you're looking to the shows for all of the answers in the paranormal and looking to the shows to pattern your style of your paranormal team off of, I think you're missing the boat. You know, the paranormal shows
exactly.
themselves are they're geared towards the people that enjoy the paranormal. As a paranormal investigator myself, I have a real hard time sitting down and watching any of those shows. I really do, because I can't watch them. I'm constantly asking myself, well, why did they do that? Or, you know,
it's like, where did that shadow come from? I'm like, they probably actually put that on TV for a reason, right? I mean, you know how TV works. I don't know.
Unfortunately, I do know how TV works. I got to deal with television producers about a year and a half ago when we were filming Paranormal Witness, and that's a headache. It really is, and I don't think I'm cut out for TV, and that's okay with me.
You know what? I've become, and same thing, doing the radio shows and having pretty much everybody who has or had a TV show, hanging out with them personally and talking with them, actually in person. And it's like the stuff that happens at the locations isn't what is actually happening, or what's broadcast is what I should say. The problem that you have with TV shows is they have a production department, and they have to, everything has to go through production. They have to make a 1 hour show or a half hour or whatever it is. So they trim the fat on whatever the hell they want to. The team could have caught the most compelling thing ever, but they didn't air it. So it's a lot of, I mean, you can't scrutinize the people on the shows. I know everybody talks a lot of crap about Zach, Dick, and Aaron and this, that, and the other thing. If you talk to them on a personal level about paranormal, they're extremely knowledgeable. They're very, very thorough. They're very passionate about what they do. They come across as douchebags on TV. But
I mean, I like Aaron and Nick, but that's all I'm gonna say.
I know, Tasha, you have a personal vendetta with Zach. I understand that. We've talked about that numerous times. But
I don't know.
To actually, if you were to sit down and read Zach's books, if you were to see, you know, how he is, he actually does know his stuff.
Honestly, though, I mean, and I was, like, really stupid when I started going out and doing this stuff. You know, like, I mean, cussing demons out, basically, oh, come out and get me. And, yeah, it happened. And he's right about that. That's the only thing I will agree with him with. The only thing. Okay, carry on.
Yeah, I shouldn't have brought up Zach with Tasha on the show.
You pushed that button again. Now you got her blonde hair standing up on end now.
No, her blonde hair is clenched up in balls of in her fists. Because I'm sure she ripped that out.
I actually combed my hair today. Y'all are off now. No.
Lord.
What? Oh, I see someone there looking like back fake.
getting back to getting back to Tim now. Tim, what, you know, you've gone, in your bio, you talk about you've gone a lot of places, even up in Canada. What's a couple of the places that you've been that were you got a lot of activity in, haunted-wise?
The most activity I've gotten is in a couple of actually residential homes that we've done. But as far as activity in larger locations, I'm not one that goes to the paid-for locations. I've investigated Ohio State Reformatory one time, but it was as part of an event, and there were over 100 people walking around. And honestly, I got so annoyed after the first hour of getting flashlights in the eyes every time I turned a corner that I kind of gave up.
You know, was that up at Mansfield or Mansfield?
Yes,
I was up there. Yes, I was there.
So you were the one with the flashlight.
Well, I had one. Oh my God.
Yeah, I completely understand when it comes to events. It's really hard to do an investigation with everybody walking around. I know several years ago I did a conference down here in Texas I put on, and that was the one thing that I wanted to do. I limited the amount of people in the public that were allowed to go on the night investigations. In fact, I had four locations, and I only had 50 people, and I broke them up in about groups of 12. But I had 16 paranormal teams, so there was more paranormal investigators than there were people, you know, that just kind of wanted to experience it and whatnot. And it turned out really well because the people commented on the fact that they got more of a personalized you see what investigation is like, because they got to see different styles, different teams. And it really worked out well, because I was just kind of like, when I did the event, I was like, no, I'm not going to have like hundreds of people stomping through these locations. And these locations weren't small by any means. I had two hotels. One was 9 stories. One was 3 stories. And then I had a location that had a jail in the basement and a theater on the top 2 floors. So these were huge locations on a train station that was 3 stories. So by the time we scattered everybody out throughout these locations, you know, you had maybe 5 or 6 people on a floor. So it really narrowed it down, and yeah, I just wanted to have a more good experience for some of these people that paid to go on the night investigation. It worked out, but yeah, I've been to some of these these events where you got hundreds of people talking, carrying on, and you really can't accomplish much.
I understand that totally.
Yeah, I was waiting for a response, but apparently that didn't pop in.
Okay, well, I can give a response. No, seriously, if you all have ever been to Bobby Mackey's, it's outside Cincinnati. That is where everything got started. That is the most evil place I've ever been to in my life, and I've been to a lot of places. Please, Lord, just go up there just one time. That'll change your opinion about a lot of stuff. Come home, I got scratched. I got bit out of nowhere. And
and there is more silence.
Now, Matt, were you going to say something?
Yeah, the Tim, if you did ever want, I don't know if you remember or not, when we were talking about that that private residence in Fond du Lac.
Yeah, I remember.
You're more than welcome anytime to go there, because you're a hell of a lot closer than I am when I get the phone call saying, hey, there's some stuff going on right now. I don't know what it is. It takes me 2.5 hours. It would take you 25 minutes.
I'm always willing to help out. It just, I don't feel comfortable going there just because there might be activity and, you know, you know what I mean. I don't want to enjoy myself with somebody else. But if they need, the help, I'd be happy.
Oh, no, it's something like, it's become more sporadic, but it'll last for like 3 or 4 days. And then the two girls that are on the property, the living ones, not the deceased ones, they still see stuff, hear stuff, and I'll get a phone call from the homeowner saying, yeah, we have stuff going on right now. Is there any time that you can come up? I'm like, well, it's Tuesday, and I have to work for the rest of the week. But I'd love for you guys to go check it out, and it would kind of validate for me what I've got there, and also would be something on a collaboration thing where it's like, you know, we checked this out, and I see what you're saying, but I think it's this. And I would have no problem with a critique because with it being a private residence with younger children on the property, there's still, it's docile. It's not anything that's malicious, but there's still stuff that goes on to freak the kids out. I mean, they have Del Morte because her husband's Latino, they have Del Morte all over their house. And it kind of went out of the house. It's not really there anymore. But the barn is still a hotbed of activity.
Yeah, like I said, if they ever need the help or you want us to come down and we have the weekend open, then I'd be more than happy to help you out.
Yeah, I mean they're just in they're in Eden, Wisconsin, just outside of Fond du Lac.
Yeah, that's not too far.
Yeah, exactly. That's a lot closer for you than it's for me. So, and
now,
she's told me flat out too. She goes, you know what? If you trust them, if you want them to come out, if you can't make it, she goes, I have absolutely no problem. No problem at all with opening the door to them.
Well, we would definitely do our best.
Now, in your experiences with residential cases, you probably can't put a number on it, but a lot of the cases that you dealt with, were they cases that someone in the home did something or played around with something, whatever it might be, or involved in something that all of a sudden kind of opened the door and the activity started happening in the home? Or were they more geared around homes that people moved into and kind of inherited what was there?
There's been a handful of homes that we've been in where, you know, they've admitted, you know, we've done something here that may have, you know, opened the door or brought something in, and you know, that's out of like 125 cases that we've done in almost a 7-year span. So you know, and you want to hope that people are truthful with you, and you want to hope that, you know, when you're trying to help them that they'll be completely honest. But you know, I'm sort of a pessimist, and I think that sometimes people aren't very upfront with the stupid things that they've done. So you know, there's been a handful of people that have admitted it. But, you know, if I had to guess, there's probably about another handful that have done it and won't see anything. But, you know, it comes and goes. I mean, the activity itself, the amount of cases that we get, I wish there was a pattern to it. There really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I'm one of those investigators that I'm always comparing notes to other teams in other states and always trying to find any kind of pattern in what goes on, you know. that's, I guess, is part of my makeup, but that's one thing I do. It's trying to find patterns, which a lot of times there isn't. It's like every time, and I told, and I, you know, mentioned in your bio, you try to mentor teams. Well, actually, I kind of added, I had to cut down your bio because it wouldn't all fit, but in your bio, you sent me, you also mentor, you know, teams, new teams, or, you know, teams in the paranormal, and kind of share your experiences and what you guys do. And, you know, that's what I do as well. And I try to explain to these teams, it's not like you're paying to go on a location. You know, when you pay to go on a location, hundreds of teams, thousands of teams have been there. You kind of know, hey, there's something going on here, right? But when you undertake a residential case, you don't know what you're walking into, whether it's the clients themselves or the activity. And it kind of explained to our audience, you know, what you do, you know, to try to give advice to these younger teams.
Well, any team that is willing to listen and willing to learn, I'm willing to talk to them. And I wasn't always that way. When I first started out, I was very closed off, and you know, because I didn't know anybody. But I've gotten to the point now in the state that I live in where, you know, I'm one of those teams that people respect. And, you know, I see a lot of new teams come into this field, and some of them know more than others. And whether you want to or not, we're all compared to each other. It's not a competition, but you know, people will say, hey, we had this paranormal team in and they were horrible. They'll never say the exact paranormal team, because, you know, that just doesn't happen. They just say paranormal team, so it makes us all look bad. So there was kind of a point where I decided, hey, you know, I'm going to try to help these younger teams, you know, get more experienced, get more knowledgeable, because at the end of the day, we're all compared against each other, and, you know, it's all about the client. And if I can help a team get better at what they do and it helps another family, well, then, you know, I'm still doing my job and I've done the right thing. So that's the reason that I do it. I don't go seeking out other teams. You know, I don't contact them and say, you know, yeah, there's a good chance I know more than you, and I would like to prove it. that's not what I do. You know, if a team reaches out to me and they have a question, and we develop a friendship and a relationship, and, you know, I'll work with them as much as I can. There's a team down in the Milwaukee area called Bruce City Paranormal. Friends of mine, Charles Bruss and Brad Hagen, really good guys, in it for the right reason. I respect those guys a lot. And, you know, we talk all the time. You know, Charles and I talk on a weekly basis. Josh Vanderwettering from Kakana Paranormal Research Team, he's pretty much patterned his team off of what we do. And that's an honor. That's flattering. And kind of taking Josh under my wing, and he's a hell of an investigator now. You know, the more he learns, the less he has to ask me. So I kind of miss talking to him a little bit, but he's good at what he does. And it's nice to see teams in the area that you can count on and you know, that are going to, you know, be good for this field, you know, because God knows there's enough teams out there that give us a black eye. We need more teams that people look at and say, you know what, they do it the right way, and they do it and they're respectful, and you know, we just need more teams like that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Matt, Tasha, you have anything?
Oh, I'm here. I was listening. I don't actually, I think me and you have talked about this before, but I don't believe in teams. I really don't. I guess because I'm psychic, but I know what's going on. What is it about a team? I mean, like, please somebody explain that to me. I can go out and do this stuff by myself. I mean, really?
I'll let Jim can
care of it.
Jim, if you want to tell Tasha what's good about being on a team.
I think the answer is she's not going to listen to anything I have to say anyway. But I like having the team aspect. You know, there's people watching out for you, looking out for you. And, you know, it's like a family to me. You know, could I go out there and investigate these places by myself safely? I don't know if I could. I'm not sick.
See, I don't feel like that. I'm totally different. Wow.
Yeah.
That's why I don't want a team. Well, my daughter's on the team. That's about it.
Well, you know.
If I can interject
like
on the whole
camera
team
for me.
Thing.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. For some reason.
Tasha, here's my idea of why a team is good. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 15, 20 people or anything like that. But when you're involved with other people that trust you, believe in you, it doesn't matter if you're the team leader or you're just one of the people on the team, they chose you to be a part of it. Because you can bring something to that team that's going to be something of knowledge, something of an expertise as far as, if you're a carpenter, a structural designer, your HVAC for expansion and contraction of this, that, and the other thing in the houses, whether it's plumbing or it's the heating system. If you have somebody who's a physician or a doctor or, you know, a pharmacist or anything, there's so many different facets that will come together with the people that you trust to make sure that you can weed out everything that has to do with what would be something that's a possibility versus something that's fact that's happening in the house.
I have to say it on the radio show. Oh, my God. I know the Bible. And I know what it says about doctors. Woe unto the doctors. I don't go to a damn doctor.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, and that's your belief, but the person whose house that you're going into may be seeing a psychiatrist for depression or bipolar or schizophrenia. That's somebody who is going to use what they've learned. Hold on. That's something that they have learned, and that's their focus of study. That you may not know. So as an independent going in, unless you know everything of how a home works and every medication and side effect and all that other stuff, that's something that person can help you out and be like, hey, you know what? The line of questioning on the pre-investigation with that homeowner, okay, yeah, she's kind of an alcoholic or he or whatever, has also been put on this medication, which also has these side effects. That's knowledge that you don't know, that you can kind of weed out, like, all right, we're going to approach this to see if it's the homeowner and I'm using this as an example because I've been through it. There was a home that we did. The woman was kind of a raging alcoholic on a new medication and said all this stuff was happening in her house. So we were able to weed out that there was no actual paranormal activity. I knew that before we did the investigation, but we did the investigation just to see. So if I didn't bring everybody with their own expertise into that before the investigation, I'm basically... I hate to use this terminology. I'm basically chasing a ghost. I'm chasing something that I can't see that isn't there. I don't know why she's saying this stuff happened. But because I had somebody who's a pharmacist there, me with my psychology and counseling background, also doing construction myself, but one of the other team members that I had there, that's all he does is structural integrity for buildings and does private homeowner remodels and stuff like that on the side. All of us coming together, we came to the conclusion before we even went in this is probably something that's manifesting within her because of XYZ. But we're still going to see if there's something there.
Now, going back, to, and I think Tim summed it up really well, because I feel the same way that what Tim summed it up, that a team is a family. I know my team, we just don't get together to go on investigations. We'll hang out. We'll do some barbecues. We celebrate each other's birthdays. We've had Christmas together, those type of things. So it really, truly is a close-knit family-type environment. You know, and it's not for everybody. I got several friends in the paranormal that are not part of teams. They kind of freelance and do their own thing. But, you know, that's part of being in this field. We all have our niche. We all have our purpose, you know, and some people enjoy the team environment and some enjoy doing it on their own, you know. So there's really no right or wrong when it comes to what you do. It's what you put into the field and ultimately help the client is should be the ultimate goal. Now, Tim, I didn't know if I asked you this. I don't think I have. How many team members do you have on your team currently?
Currently, we have 12, and we don't take everybody on every investigation. That's not feasible. You know, most we take is about 4 or 5 if it's a residence. The reason we have so many is because, you know, we all have families, we all have jobs, we all have interests outside of the paranormal. So you get a chance to do a residential investigation, and you know, I put it out there, you know, the date, and ask who can be available that night. And, you know, if we get more than 4 or 5, then, you know, we choose which 4 or 5 we take that night. But we do the same thing, you know, with barbecues and holidays and Thanksgiving. We have everybody over here, and we have a big gathering here, and it's and I've always tried to make it seem as much like a family as I can, you know, because at the end of the day, there's going to be situations that you're in where you're going to have to turn to your team member and know that they have your back. And what better way to do that than to have family? And, you know, if you care about that person enough to call them family, you probably care about them enough to help them when they're in danger. And I'm not just talking about paranormal danger. I'm talking about you know, a floorboard that breaks and their foot goes through, or, you know, other dangers inside the house. And we've been in places where we've encountered a squatter. You know, the person didn't know that they had somebody living in their upstairs. You know, and at that point, you have to know that that person has your back. So, you know, that's another big reason that, you know, I like having a team. You know, I like having people there that have the same interests, and, you know, that's just the way that we do it.
Well, you know, I got scrutinized a lot down here because at one point I had 15 members on my team. And other teams, you know, they had 4 or 5, some 2, 3, whatever it might be. And they're like, why such a large team? And I said, because everybody that's on my team works, have families, they have lots of priorities, so they can't make everything. And I said, when you have that many members, you can always fill out an investigation. You always have people to be able to go, that 4 or 5 that you need. You always have available. It may not be the same 4 or 5 every time because of schedules. I said if I only had 3 or 4 people on my team and we all have crazy schedules, we're never going to be able to get together and get these cases done. So, you know, that's the benefit of having a big team. Of course, my team went through kind of a falling out with some of the members and some parted ways, so I'm down to 4 right now. We're kind of taking a little break from all the madness of the paranormal field. We still do cases if someone calls upon us, but it's been nice to have kind of like a break to get our feet back under us and refocus on what we want to do in the field. Do you guys, and I know you deal with a lot of residential cases, but do you guys try new things or come up with different ways of using equipment than what the norm is, you know, that people do. Because I've kind of got in that phase in my paranormal career where I kind of tried different things. I've even tried some old school, what people refer to as old school, some older type techniques, just to see if I can get any kind of results out of them. Do you guys do any of that kind of thing?
Hey, honestly, I'm open to anything. And my approach is usually to come at it from a personal level. You know, I try to talk to these spirits and entities as if they're in the room with me and try to understand their problems and talk to them on that level and see if I can gain their trust to the point where they want to interact with us. As far as equipment, I'm pretty simple when it comes to equipment. If there's new things out there, I'll try it once, but I always fall back on the norm. The audio recorder, the DVR system, and a millimeter. I mean, those are usually pretty much the staples of an investigation for us. I've used other things, and if they fit into what we do, that's great. If they don't, move on. But I'm one of those people that doesn't like to sit and stare at meters and gadgets all night because, you know, I'm of the mindset that if I'm concentrating on all of that stuff, you know, I may miss something that happens right in front of my face. So I like to keep it, and it's worked for us up until now. I'm open to anything, really, but it's worked for us up until now, and I don't want to switch it if I don't have to.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we discovered one time on one investigation of a home. It wasn't really a residential. I mean, the clients already knew that it was haunted, and they embraced it. And the husband had written, he's a college professor, and he'd written a book about the history of the home and history of the supposed spirits that are there. So when we went, you know, I mean, it was highly active, way active. The most EVPs I've ever gotten on a case, I ended up giving them 250 EVPs, 60 of them were Class A. The spirits were just talking our ears off on the EVP recorders. But in that case, we were setting, we're one of these teams, we turn the recorder on when we step foot on the property, you know, way before the investigation even starts. And we had a EVP recorder running upstairs, and I was setting up some DVR cameras, and we listened back to the audio, you know, when we got back home, but I had two spirits talking to each other about the cameras. One of the spirits said, "Where's the camera?" And then you hear another voice say, "It's over there." And then the first spirit goes, "Okay, I'm out of here." And I was like, that is crazy. I have two spirits on the EVP recorder talking about where the cameras are set up. It makes you wonder, you know, using all this equipment and setting up cameras. You know, I mean, they are human spirits. You know, they are aware of what's going on around them. But, you know, it was just really astonishing that I got a conversation of spirits talking about the, you know, cameras.
There have been occasions where we've turned on the audio from the moment we arrive at a place, but the one thing you have to be cautious of when you do that is it's impossible for you to know where everybody is at that point. And a lot of times that's the reason I don't do it, because there's no way to cross-reference. There's no way to know who's actually in the room and who may have been whispering and that type of thing. So I've done it in the past. We've had some decent results too, but I guess it's one of those things that I've tried, and it's to me, it's not worth the headache trying to find out, okay, is this Earth or is this actually, you know, the voice of one of my team members?
Yeah. Well, the only reason I could document it was I turned the cameras on, so we were recording at that time on the cameras, and I can timestamp it that nobody was up there when it, because I sequenced my EVP recorder with my DVR. So yeah, there was nobody upstairs by that recorder. The recorder was actually, when I set a recorder up, I set it into the camera shot so that you can actually see it on the screen and see the room, that there's nobody there. You know, because that's one thing else when you're doing investigations. There's so much check and balances that you have to do in order to prove or disprove whether what you caught was spirit activity or contamination from an investigator.
One of the things that we do, we do the cross-referencing of every recorder at that time, you know, like it sounds like you do. And at one point we had an EVP from a home that it sounded like get your blank and your daughter. And it was very concerning to me when I got this audio clip in my email from one of my team members, because it sounded like there was a threat to the daughter in the home. And we cross-referenced every recorder in the home. And what it was actually me on the first floor, right by the door, and I'm petting the family dog, and I'm saying, hey there, buddy, you're a good dog. But up one floor and around the wall, it sounded like a threat on the daughter. So you really need to be thorough. You really need to check that stuff out, because if I had taken the first clip and used it as evidence, I would have done far more harm than good. And I think that's also that we all need to learn.
Hey, Tim, do you use like Spirit Box, SB7, Frank's Box, Joe's Box? Do you use anybody's box on the investigations?
That is really an open-ended question, Matt.
Yeah, I know. I kind of did that on purpose, by the way. But
I've had the pleasure of using one Frank's box in my time in the field. I worked on a case with Julie Velasquez out of Chicago, and she has one. And I was able to use that during an investigation. And it actually told me to F off. And I know that's not on the radio. But we do have a spirit box that we use. It's just one of those shack hack type things. And it's one of those things that we don't take out of the equipment case very often. As I said, we keep the client in the time and trying to explain what this thing is and what it does and why it's making all that noise. We just generally try to keep it tucked away if you don't use it on very many cases. My spirit box is Scotty Rourke, one of the best psychic mediums ever. So he's on our team and he comes with us. And if I need an answer to something, I look to Scotty. So we do have it. We have used it, just not as often as some teams.
Well, Kevin, the reason I bring that up, and I think you'll understand as far as that goes, you should play the clip that Jody got from Farrar.
No, it's not a Farrar. It was at down in, I believe, Atlanta, Georgia. I can't remember the name of the location. Now you put me. Oh, there it is. Well, I had it. Well, kind of put me on the spot, so now I'm trying to find it.
Yeah. Wherever it was, this was them using a shack hack, and it was actually at an event that was being hosted. So there was a bunch of people in the room. But when you start to get into the radio frequencies, all that kind of stuff, it's not like audio when you're doing a public event to where you have to go back and listen, oh, was that somebody talking? Was it somebody whispering? That's one of the nice things about it being the quote-unquote parlor trick. If you do get something, you know it has nothing to do with anybody that was there. Unless somebody is there and broadcasts something from their pocket that's going to mess with radio frequency. But what I love about this clip, and I guess we can leave the profanity and all the rest of the stuff of the reaction out of it. But, this is probably one of the best, and Kevin will tell you the same thing. I trust Jody when it comes to authenticity, that she doesn't mess with anything. She's not going to BS anybody on anything at all.
No. Well, she wasn't the only paranormal investigator there. There was a whole other team in the room with as well. That have a good reputation in the field as well. So let's see if I can get this thing to play on my computer here.
Do the other men here bother you?
And we will skin you alive.
Oh!
So
that was Cliff.
So what what intrigues me about them, not bothers me, that was the totally wrong word, and I'll slap myself in the face later, don't worry. What intrigues me about that is all the rest of the background noise drops out. And if you listen to the scan rate, that would have been over like 6 radio stations, which you'll probably get cross-feed between like 3. But I was really, really impressed with that, how the audio drops out. Then Kevin, you probably know better than I do of the history of the location, considering I had the whole location wrong. I swear that was at Farrar. I have to text Jody.
No, that was not at Farrar. Right after that man said, "I will skin you alive," the ghost box stops. It completely drains the batteries, and it just goes dead right after that when everybody's screaming. So, I mean, I don't know. It's really intriguing. You know, could it be CB radio picking up, you know, this, that, or another? I don't know. It's one of those things where you just go, well, I can't really explain it. It could be, you know, it's kind of hard. It's tricky. But would I use it as evidence in a case? No.
No. But it's one of those cool things that makes you just go, what?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, do you guys on your team, Tim, since you have so many, do you have anybody on your team that's got psychic abilities, mediumship, that can communicate with the spirits? Do you use psychics in any way on your team?
We do. Scotty Rourke has been working with us now for about 2.5 years. And Scotty comes on cases that we've then been fortunate enough to investigate more than one time already. We don't bring him on a case as the first time, mostly because, you know, his time is valuable and he's very good at what he does. And I want to make sure that the places I bring him to, you know, are worthy and are active and places that need his help. Other than that, the rest of us, no psychic abilities, no mediumship abilities, and we rely on the work that we do.
Right. Yeah, you know, I was, and no offense, Tasha, when I first got into the field several years ago, of course I had joined a team before I started the one I have now, but we all kind of had the philosophy when we were first getting in the field that, you know, most psychics are fake, right? So we didn't want to put someone on our team that could possibly jeopardize, you know, our team and the fact of being really real or having somebody that's making up stuff, you know. But at that time, we were kind of
making up anything. Why are you afraid of, like, actually, like, knowing the truth?
No. Listen. I'm saying when I first started in the field, because we were all naive. We didn't understand not only the paranormal, but we didn't understand people that had gifts. being that said, when I started the team that I have now, when I started back in 2010, 4 years ago, I was open to that fact. And, in fact, three of my members have abilities, and they're all different. And it kind of goes in with what we talk about with team. Each person brought their own special talent to the field. And so I was just saying, Tasha, in the very beginning, I was very naive because I didn't understand people that had gifts. So, and we thought, you know, the stereotypical thing from hearing from other people that most psychics are fake, right? But we didn't understand that till we actually met people and made friends with them and understood and did more research and made more friends in the field that there are people that truly have some type of gift and are using it to help clients. So it was kind of like a journey for us in a way. You know, I mean, I'm sure you, through your life, have come across people that if you divulge that, hey, I have psychic abilities, they kind of give you that look like, are you for real or, you know, what the hell is this? You know what I'm saying? I'm sure you've dealt with that.
A couple of them, yeah, but still.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a family that actually believes in me.
Yeah.
I know what I'll do.
Yeah.
And I can't explain it. I cannot explain it.
Right. But that's why I was pointing that out of my journey as an investigator. I was naive like a lot of people that you've come across in your life until I started understanding. And I believe, just like Tim bringing in Scotty for these cases, because a lot of times, and nowadays, you kind of have to have somebody that's got ability to come in and either reiterate what you're picking up on your EVP recorders or on your equipment, you know, in the same fact. Because I have a psychic, well, I did, that worked really well with me. And when we went to residential cases, I kept him completely in the dark. All he knew was what town we were going to, and that was it. And I didn't tell him that until we got in the car. And I would bring him to the location, and I told the clients, I said, look, this person has abilities. He knows nothing about the case. He knows nothing about y'all. So what he picks up is what he picks up. And he was pretty spot on with everything he picked up, and the client's reactions were just priceless because they were like, oh, my God, how did he know that? He would even tell them where they were experiencing certain paranormal activity, which they didn't even tell me that. He would tell them where they would see a shadow figure, you know, every night. Those kind of specifics. And so sometimes, you know, when you're doing cases, using somebody that has abilities is a very good thing, because like Tim, you know, Tim says that most of his team doesn't have, you know, none of his team has abilities, so he brings in Scotty. So for them, I would imagine it kind of helps reiterate either way on what they're picking up. Am I right, Tim?
It's all about validation, you know, for Scotty and for us, you know. Some of the times that Scotty has told us things and we've been able to validate them through our evidence and through things that have happened on the investigation, you know, you can see how happy he is too, because he's been proven right. At the end of the day, whatever we can do to help, you know, the client and how they're feeling is what we'll do.
Right. Now, do you guys, I would imagine you have plenty of people in that, you know, that are in the field, that if you had to call somebody, you know, to kind of help out or revalidate, not only with Scotty, but I'm sure you probably have other people that you use if you need to for the client.
Is this my opportunity to name drop?
Oh, not in Kentucky, we don't.
But, Tim, what were you saying?
I said, are you giving me permission to name drop now? Am I supposed to tell you the people
oh,
that
you
I can...
Know, you know, you no, you don't have, you can either name drop or you can just, you know, it doesn't matter.
Some of the greatest friends I have in the field, Brian Cano, I go to him a lot for advice. Not just on the paranormal, but life itself. You know, we're pretty good friends. Scott Templeman is a great source for me for life advice. And then when it comes to the more serious investigations and the more negative hauntings that we deal with, you know, John Zaffis and Bill Beaton are great guys that I can call up, and they're always willing to talk to me and walk me through things. So, yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm very fortunate, you know, the place I'm at in this field that I can call these people and get the help that I need.
That's good. You know, that to me, a sign of a true dedicated team to helping a client is when they reach out to other people in the field, you know, because the bottom line is the client. And, you know, when you put, because there's some teams that their egos are so high, they wouldn't do that. They think that they can solve everything themselves. And the sign of a really dedicated team is somebody that reaches out when they need to. Now, talk about, I read, and, you know, I kept not pronouncing it correctly. But talk about the charity that you, what you do with your you know, with doing local animal shelters and all that as well. We want to get that in.
I talked about when I moved into the home earlier in the show, and it was a very depressing time for me. At the time, I thought, you know, my life sucks and everything's over. And obviously, you know, it wasn't. But at that moment in time, I didn't know that. Here I was in the house, and I had this activity happening. And I had always wanted a dog. You know, it was my first home that I owned, and I wanted a dog. So I looked up on the internet. I looked up on PetFinder.com, and I wanted a yellow lab. And what I actually found was a yellow lab / pit bull mix, and the story got me. He was 6 months old. He was rescued from the house because he was beaten severely. And to the point now, he can't wake his tail. Somebody tried to tear it off when he was a puppy, and he can't physically wake his tail. But there was a night where things got very, very serious for me, and I almost did something very. And the reason I didn't is because my dog Murray walked into the bathroom as I was trying to put his head on my my arm. And at that moment, I realized that he needed me just as much as I needed him. And it wasn't my family. It wasn't my friends. It was a little dog that made sure that I was still here. So I started telling people about this suicide attempt, and as a way of trying to get people to tell them that, you know, life is always better than next day. You know, you always have a chance to make tomorrow better than today was. And from that point on, me and Murray were like father and son. I really have not treated him as a dog since that moment. He's one of the most spoiled dogs in the world. And it got to the point where he was about 7 years old. And I was doing all these events, and I didn't have anything at my table because I just wasn't somebody that sold a bunch of things. And I thought, well, you know, I should do something with that table and do something with the time and try to create a legacy for Murray so people remember who he was and what he did and how very special he was to me. And that's when the idea for Pawtograph for Pooches was formed. And his pawtograph is on every picture. And I sell them for $10 at every event that I do. And the reason for that is that I want there to be a legacy for Murray. I want people to remember him, and by, you know, giving the money to these shelters in the area of the event, you know, they can use that money to fund adoptions, fund medical expenses, fund supplies, and my hope is that, you know, Murray will be remembered. That was the reason that I started it, and it's become very, very popular, and it's something where I've done events that aren't paranormal related. You know, they're Comic-Con events, and I get weird looks from people because they don't understand the correlation. The correlation is the paranormal field has given me this platform to speak about podagressor pooches and to bring this cause to people. Without the paranormal field, nobody would listen to me, and a lot of people don't anyway. But without the paranormal field, people wouldn't listen, and it's given me a chance to make a difference for these animal shelters. And I think over the course of about a year and a half now, six events, doing the quick math in my head, in six events, I think we've donated about $800 to animal shelters and helped fund adoption fees. And it's just become something that's pretty popular and something that I'm very, very proud of. And, you know, you're making a difference and doing something right.
You should be proud about that.
Well, and that's what's phenomenal, especially when it comes to the adoption animals. I mean, Murray had a huge, huge impact on your life. Not saying that, you know, other dogs that are acquired from other places don't. But the past four dogs that my family has had have been rescues. There's Paw Chicago, which is huge down here. They have numerous locations. They're a non-kill shelter. And they go through and they do everything. I mean, they deworm, they vaccinate, they neuter or spay if need be. Well, they're all non-for-profit organizations. So they're taking these animals who have been in a not-so-animal-friendly environment for their lives, whether they've been abused or malnourished or anything like that. They rehabilitate them to a point of ready to go to a home. They have the dogs that are ready to be adopted, then they have the dogs that are in process, which I know that sounds kind of like a not like they're in process of rehabilitation. So they may need their shots. They may need to be neutered or spayed. They may need to, you know, whatever. But they make sure that your dog is socially ready. They do a complete thorough background check. Police background, government background check. They actually come to your house with the animal to see how it interacts in the environment. Has to meet every single person in the environment before they'll release that dog or cat or whatever animal to you.
Yeah.
And being a non-for-profit, they're not making any money. Their donations, like their adoption fees, if it's, you know, $200, $300, $400, whatever it is, that goes right back into the next dog that they're trying to find a home for, or cat that they're trying to find a home for. That is extremely commendable to me. What was that, Tasha?
I said at least somebody gets it. I know.
Yeah, and Tim, I know that, you know, with Murray, it was, I saw, not physically or personally, but I saw the bond that you had. And that dog was, you know, kind of everything to you.
Well, he still is. He's not gone yet. Let's not get rid of him yet.
No, I know that. But I mean, in the physical world, he is. But in the emotional world, he will never be.
Yeah, that dog will always be with me. I believe that in my heart. There's a connection there. And, you know, I said earlier, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I really believe that there was a reason that I ended up with this dog. And he is. He's everything to me. Honestly, it's, you know, people that don't know me and don't know the situation, a lot of them judge how much I love my dog. I get messages on Facebook all the time when I post pictures or statuses about him. You're like, what's up with you and your dog, man? That's weird. And generally, those people don't make it very long as Facebook friends because I just don't need them around.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I still haven't. This is, I think, from when I was like 7 or 8. I had a dog named Shadow. She was a Brittany Spaniel, the other one. Well, we didn't know because she didn't have papers. It was a mutt. A Brittany Spaniel Black Lab mix is what the best that we could figure out that she was. I still, to this day, have pictures of that dog. I'm 33 now. I still have pictures all over the place. Her ashes are on my bookshelf. Like, that was my baby. When I was in elementary school, and which was walking for me to and from school, elementary school, junior high, it didn't matter. She knew what time I was coming home, and she would sit at the back door and wait for me. So that was my girl. That was my little one. Her name was Shadow. And, well, I say little one, but I mean she was 56 pounds. Not big, not small, medium sized dog. But no, she's absolutely phenomenal. And I will always. And people look at me like I'm weird, too, like girlfriends in the past and stuff like that. Like, why do you have your dog's ashes from when you were a kid on your bookshelf? Why do you have, you know, pictures of her? She died when you were, like, 16, 17. Like, well, because obviously you don't understand and really don't need to talk to you anymore. Sounds superficial, but if somebody doesn't have that love or have that identification with an animal, there's a human aspect that they don't get. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with that. Amen. Snap, snap, snap. Oh, I was just doing it too.
Sorry, I'm back. I'm on call for work. I'm on call from work, and I got paged, so I got to drive up to work, but I'm still going to be on air. I'm multitasking. Now, also, I'd read on your bio to everybody earlier in the show. Talk about your new announcement about this web series and the people involved and what you guys are going to do.
Well, the web series is exciting for me because, you know, like I said earlier, I'm not much of a TV guy, but this was an opportunity that was brought to me by Scott Tepperman. And, you know, he explained it as, you know, we're gonna film the entire thing, you know, research to reveal. Nothing is going to be edited out. And we're just going to label what's in the show and show people what goes into an actual paranormal investigation. There's no producers. Nobody's going to edit my words. I was on Paranormal Witness for 3 minutes, and they managed to edit what I had said and put it with a video that I had. I've been there before. Producers can do that. So it was a. And Todd Arnold on the cast is my lead investigator for Fox News Paranormal Team. I've been working with Todd for almost 7 years now. Scotty Rourke, you know, I've been working with him for a couple of years now, a very good friend of mine, like a brother to me. Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence a few years ago on True TV. And we do have a contest going for the sixth member of the team. And the contest is, you know, send us the video and tell us why you'd be good for the show and why, you know, you'd be a good fit for this team. And a lot of the criteria that goes into picking a team member is going to go into picking a member of this cast, because I want to be around people that I feel comfortable around. And so if you make a video, you can send it to huntthiswebseries@gmail.com. And we have not set a deadline yet for the videos, but I would get them in soon. And once we narrow it down to 5, then we will open it up to the public for voting. So we're hoping that when we narrow it down to five, there's five people all of us are very comfortable with, and no matter who wins.
Awesome. I think I'm going to do that. Yes.
So, go for it. The more the merrier, actually. I want to get the word out and you know, get people excited about this project, and I really do think it's going to be a great thing because it's going to give the people that love the paranormal field a real look at those investigations. You know, not the stuff you see on TV, not the stuff that's canned, you know, down into, what, 20 minutes or 44
minutes. Yeah, what actually happens to you.
Exactly. And we're going to be filming from, you know, from dusk and, you know, from dusk to dusk, I guess. You know, stuff behind the scenes, you know, when we go out to lunch together, the interaction between the group members, you know, that stuff like that. And these guys I've known forever. Patrick, not so much. I've known him for a few years. But Scott and I have been like brothers for 3 or 4 years now. He wrote the foreword to my book. Scott Tepperman did. Just a fantastic guy. I love him to death. And I'm going to see him here in 2 days because we have to take care of him together. And I'm looking forward to getting up there and getting to talk to some more people and promote Hunt This. And it's going to be a project that I believe is going to be successful. And I can't get started.
Well, any information, since I'm the closest to you, that you want to send me to promote to try and get the word out, 100% I'll do it. And don't worry, I'm not going to submit a video and cheat.
Hunt This has a Facebook page. It's Hunt This, a New Paranormal Theories. Just search that on Facebook. Please go like the page, and there's information on there. You know, the email and everything is on there, where you can send in a video and you know, tell us what you think of the idea. We've gotten a lot of support here in the first week, and it's been exciting for all of us, and all of us are looking forward to getting started.
Very nice.
There it is.
It's a great opportunity for people to see, you know, what goes on in an investigation, unbeknownst to what you see on TV.
Like I said, the thing that was appealing to me is that there's no producer, you know, changing what I said or editing what I said and putting it somewhere where I didn't see it. You know, everything that makes it to air is because it is there because we want it to be. You know, there's no excuse to say, hey, that's not what we said, and we will have full ownership of what we do, and that's it. You know, we get to do things the way we want to do them.
Nice.
What's all this paranormal crap coming through the radio?
Oh,
all these sounds and noises and creaks. Oh, okay.
It's me driving, sorry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I got to do my real job that pays the bills.
Oh, you mean this one doesn't?
No. This one's for knowledge.
And the reason that I bring that up, Tim, I've actually seen and I know probably we're going to go with this, I've seen a couple people recently in our network being like Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa. A lot more of the trend is actually groups charging people to check out their homes. How do you feel about that?
Well, this is internet radio, but I still can't give you my real opinion. I don't think people charged for comfort. I don't think people should be charged for the chance that we're able to help them. I don't think there's a price on that. And the teams that do go out of their way to promote themselves as a business, and I was probably about a month ago on one of my Facebook posts, somebody was very defiant and said that, you know, it was a business and he needed to fund himself somehow. And basically my response to that was, well, there's the difference between the two of us. You're worried about making money, and I'm worried about making sure people are comfortable. And I left it at that. And that really is, that's pretty much it in a nutshell for me. I will never as God is my witness, I will never charge anyone for any paranormal investigation. I just, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's the right thing to do. And like I said, I don't think there's a price on somebody's comfort. And I don't think people should have to choose between, can I feed my family this week, or can I have somebody come in and explain what's going on in my home? So for that reason, you know, you'll never see me do that.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, it's not like the field that we're in is everything that – the things that you know may not be some of the things that I know, or vice versa, or our belief system. There's a lot of variables in the paranormal, and we don't know everything. There's not one of us that has every answer to every question that we have in our mind about what goes on. So – being that said, there's no way you can charge somebody to come in when, number one, you may not know enough to help them. Two, there's no guarantee that you're going to get rid of whatever's there, right, or come up with reasons why it's there, this, that, and other. There's no guarantee. I mean, so, what are these people going to do? Are they going to have a money-back guarantee? If you don't get rid of my ghost, you get your money back? Please. There shouldn't be any kind of price in it. Go ahead.
How about I can? I do know everything. Your house will be fine, even though you have a shit ton of demons in it. Can I have a TV show?
Okay. Let me reiterate a little bit. I know the Bible says for a fact, so the soothsayers, and they call them psychics, or paranormal investigators, whatever you want to call them, do not charge for anything. Bam.
I must have missed that section in the Bible to where it says that paranormal investigators can't charge for anything.
Well, no, it doesn't say paranormal investigator, but soothsayers do not take money for what they do.
Yeah, I know. I got to give you shit, dear.
you're talking about experts before. And yeah, I agree. There are no experts, but there are people in this field with more experience.
I really
think that we owe it to, and I've had this, you know, I'm going to name drop again because you invited me to before. I've had this discussion with John Zaffis, and I came right out and I told him, I said, I want to be one of those people in the next generation of paranormal investigators that people like you can look back and be proud of. And I really do. I take that to heart because there's a responsibility that we have. You know, the people that have come before us and have paved the way and have moved to this field, this study, to where it is today. And there still are so many questions to be answered. But I told him, I said, I'm going to make you proud. Not because I'm going to do something amazing, I'm going to be on TV or anything like that. I'm just going to try to do this the right way every day and make sure that you can look back once you're done with your investigative career. Make sure you can look back and say, you know what, you know, some of these people took to heart the advice that we had. And I think as new investigators and new ghost hunters, if you want to call it that, I think we owe it to ourselves to talk to these people that have 30-plus years of experience, 40 years of experience. They're not experts. And they'll tell you that. But I can tell you right now that there's a good chance that John Zaffis has forgotten more about the paranormal field than I know. And I'm going to take advantage. I'm going to take advantage of that knowledge. And there's people out there that don't have that very high of an opinion of John Zaffis, and I get that. That's fine. I love the guy. There's going to be people that hate everybody. It's just a fact of life. You know, I try to be as nice as I can, and I have people that don't like me. So I don't let it bother me. I don't know why they don't like me. It's no skin off my ass. So, but you know, to each their own. But I just wanted to point that out. I think we do owe it to ourselves to learn as much as we can from these people before they leave.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying John's leaving the field. I don't want to give a big retirement speech for him. But you know, before he decides to hang it up, I think we owe it to ourselves to get as much knowledge from these people as we can.
Yeah, I totally agree, because there are a lot of people that I talk to in the field that have been doing it a long time as well, and if I'm fortunate one day to be able to talk to John, I would love to, because I think the, what I like about what you said, Tim, is you put it all into perspective that people in the field really need to kind of let resonate in their head. There's people that came before us, before we even got in the field, that put so much time and effort and are still doing it, you know, the ones that are still with us. But there's so many people that have put so much time and effort into helping clients, and we owe it as the next generation to continue that legacy and make them proud, per se. So that's a great way of looking at it.
One thing I would like to add, I put it this way at some events. You know, you use it as a football analogy, and you think of John Zappas as your favorite quarterback. I look up to John. You know, say John Zappas is Peyton Manning. You know, there's not many times that Blake Bortles comes into the league his rookie year, gets to sit down with Peyton Manning and pick his brain. And that's an opportunity that I have, and I'm not going to let that pass me by. So, you know, you look at it that way, there's very few opportunities in other fields where you learn from these people and want to teach. And I just can't stress that enough, that, you know, don't let that opportunity pass.
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it. Now, what do you, besides your web series, you got anything else going on with you and your team, going speak anywhere or anything like that?
I leave Thursday morning at 6 a.m., so I have a 3:30 a.m. wake-up call. I got to leave 6 a.m. to go to Winnipeg, and I'm going to be up there September 11th through the 14th for Winnipeg Paracon. And I can't tell you enough how much I love going to that event. Fonz and Sharon Granger do a fantastic job putting this together with all of their volunteers. Their volunteers work endless hours and just don't get any credit for it. And they put together a hell of an event. They really do. They treat you like royalty up there, just first class all the way. And I was there last year. I'm looking forward to being there again this year. October, I'm going to Little Traverse Bay, Petoskey, Michigan. And another event run by a very good friend, John Cassidy, of mine, and puts together a fantastic event over there and really treats us like gold, too. So looking forward to that. In November, I'll be at Sedumsville Rectory in Ohio and doing an investigation down there in an event with Chris Dedman and Nick Lance and a few other people, Chris Vickers. And I can't think of all the people that are going to be down there at this moment, but that's going to be in November. You can find all those things on my Facebook page. Just a lot of good things happening for me, and appreciate it. And every event that I'm at, I sell my book, All Roads Lead to the Paranormal. It's kind of half biography and half what's gone on in my paranormal career up until about a year ago. It's just, I think it's not a literary masterpiece, let's put it that way. I didn't make the book so it would be studied studied in English class, but it's written from the heart, and I believe it's a good book. It has a message, and I do sell that at the events that I do, and so far the response has been fairly good. So that's good news. And beyond that, I'm pretty open for next year. So I love doing the events. I love meeting people. I love exchanging ideas and theories. And, as long as they keep wanting me to come to events, I'll keep going.
Did we lose everyone?
I'm here.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. It just went, like, real, real silent. But, yeah, you stopped talking, and it was, like, beyond crickets. Speaking of dead, it was kind of extreme dead air. Anyway, I think Kevin must have muted us. No, there's the background noise. He's still there.
Chirp.
No, Tim, it's been... what, Tasha?
What?
I don't know.
What did you say?
Apparently I'm hearing things, but I don't get it.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, good.
I tried to duplicate the southern accent, but you're way
good.
Better at it than I am.
Oh, whatever.
No, Tim, honestly, like I've been sending you a private message, I've been behind you and supporting you guys for a long, long time. I know what you have going on up there, and I cannot commend you enough. Seriously, keep up the good work. You've got to bring your ass down here on a weekend or something like that for a investigation at the Lincoln Park Zoo with Ursula and I. In the employee section of the lion's den. And I know that sounds like a complete fart statement.
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking to Tim.
Oh. Like, well,
open your ears, dear. that would be up for you, Kasia, not down.
All right.
What's up, Tim?
He probably hung up.
I haven't.
Tim, you still there? Tim? Let me check. Yep, we lost him. So anyway, Tasha, since we lost him, but thank you for joining us, Tim. I will see you soon, I'm sure of it. Sasha, why don't you promote what you have going on at Scarefest?
I'll try to do that if I make it. Damn, this looks really early for me.
I'm thinking I'm going to mute Kevin.
A what?
No, just promote what you have going on. I was thinking I was going to mute Kevin.
Well,
because
I mean, it's this weekend. I mean, well, it's the 14th. I mean, it's like really coming up. Scarefest.com if anybody wants to get tickets. And they're pretty much sold out, so I've got my own booth. Ha ha.
And who are you next to?
Amy Allen. From Deadpool?
All right. Yeah, not a bad person to be by. Amy's awesome.
I think they are. At least they think that they give. Yeah.
What in the hell was that?
That was me choking. I don't want to be next to Zach Bacon. I don't even
all
think
right.
He's going to be there. I think I actually ran him off.
You know what? One thing I do have to promote, honestly, go see Tasha at Scarefest. She's
I'm back.
Phenomenal. Shut up. I'm working. We lost him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. If you weren't so preoccupied, then you would know that.
Sorry,
I'm
kidding. Just finished.
I'm kidding.
I walk out.
Did he just drop his call? Did he just drop his call?
Yeah, he said he got disconnected, which good old blog talk. I'm not surprised by that. you know, one thing in my closing, and Kevin and Tasha, I'll let you do your own closing, but one thing in my closing. Tomorrow night on Full Spectrum Radio, we are doing something that is very much overdue. It has to do with suicide prevention and mental health awareness. I know I've talked to people about this, but not really in depth, but this past Saturday, I lost somebody who I went to high school with, who, her name is Jennifer Jungles. You can find her obituary on my page. She decided to see if her body could stop a train. Apparently she lost.
Yeah, but ouch.
So she was a good friend through high school, but kind of lost touch, you know, over the years. She did just have a child two months ago that she leaves her fiance and her family behind, along with her friends. So I hope that, I don't know if it was postpartum depression, anything like that. I'm going to go to the wake and the service on Thursday and find out exactly what happened. But there have been also, a bunch of reasons that it spawned the idea of this show. For Dennis, he lost his brother to suicide a couple decades ago. They found him hanging in the tree.
Oh, my God. I was going to say that. Did he hang himself?
That's what the police report says. But there's a lot of reasons we're doing this show. We're going to have not only myself, but other counselors that are going to be on to talk about depression, suicide. I'm sorry to end the show on a horrible note, but we're doing it for a good reason.
Right.
If everybody has the time to join us tomorrow, just listen in. I have an event that I have posted. I also have tags and all this other stuff that I've been doing. If you go to CPR Matt, you can find the way to listen. If in fact, and this is, I can't stress this enough, I don't give a shit if there's a million people listening to the show. If you know somebody who knows somebody, or if you are a person who does need help with this, everything is completely anonymous, and we will find you the help that you need, or find that person the help that you need to prevent
this. Exactly. You got a friend. You have a friend.
The biggest thing, and why I stress this so much as far as the promotion goes, my friend Jennifer, who I was talking about, I invited her to the show on Friday in the invite section on Facebook. She decided to take matters into her own hand and end her life on Saturday, which the invite is still sitting in the invited section, so she didn't see it. If in fact she may have saw it, could that have been something that she would have gotten in touch with me and said, hey, I need help? I don't know.
Well, this is just my little psychic thing talking, but, I mean, she did it. She knows she did it, but, like, she didn't mean to do it to, like, hurt everybody, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's another subject we're
going
to touch on.
What in the hell did I just do?
Well, we're going to touch on another subject, postpartum depression, which I think a lot of women need to know about, especially if they're pregnant.
I went through that. But I didn't go that far.
Anyway, that's what's on docket for tomorrow. I'm sorry it's not something that's happy and, you know, flowers and sunshine and unicorn farts. But
yeah, really.
That is something that I think needs to be said, needs to be talked about. So
you're right.
I would appreciate it if everybody can share the link. Otherwise, I know it's running down to the last, like, minute. Tim Miley, thank you so very much. I will be in touch. Kevin, if you want to close out the rest of it, that's your show, brother. Go ahead. Or Tasha, it's up to you. Your guy's show.
No, what's Kevin's show?
Tasha's part of the crew, too. Tasha, you mentioned Scarefest, throw that out there and all that information.
Yes. Well, it's this weekend, the Friday through Sunday in Lexington, Kentucky, Lexington Convention Center, 430 West Vine Street. I say Vine. Have y'all seen my Vine? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, if you want to check out Miss Tasha, she'll be there. Go by and see her at her booth.
I'll be curious that day. Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
And
as far as
Jim, thanks for coming on. Matt, thanks for taking some time out and helping Tasha and I with the show tonight. Melissa will be back next week. I'm not sitting in front of my calendar. I know I have a guest book, but for the life of me, I don't know who they are because I can't see their name. But we do have a guest, so if you haven't liked our Terrify page on Facebook fan page, go like it, and I'll be posting the information on our guest for next Tuesday. Tune in tomorrow, Full Spectrum Radio with CPR Matt and CPR Dennis. Check them out. They got a, you know, real serious topic, but it's a much needed topic to be discussed tomorrow night. And that's pretty much it. You can catch Matt and myself again on Sunday on the URN radio show. We're having Howard Odell come in as a fill-in co-host while the ever so lovely Mr. Jeffrey Sterl does his stage production of Les Miserables. He's got play rehearsal, so he is not going to be with us for a few months. But oh well, we'll just rag on Howard on Sunday.
And he can take the punches and he can throw the punches, so I'm honored to have Howard on.
All right, Matt, if you're sitting in front of the board, you can play us out or you can just end the episode after we say our goodbyes, but I cannot do that because I'm in my truck right now.
I want to play us out, brother.
What in the world are you doing in your truck?
If you only knew. All right, well, see everybody Tuesday, tune in again, right here, Terrify Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Kevin. Tasha, dear, I will talk to you soon. If I don't talk to you before the weekend, have a great time at Scarefest, and let me know how it's going. Let me know if you need me to whoop anybody's ass verbally. Other than that, it's been a pleasure, dear. It always is. All right. And she is gone as well. So, or is she?
I'm still here.
All right.
She probably
is gone. Anyway, Kevin, brother, thank you, man. Love you. I will talk to you soon. Hopefully work is not too busy. And this is Misguided Ghosts.
back, don't try and follow me. I'll return as soon as possible. See, I'm trying to find my place, but it might not be here where I feel safe. We all learn to make mistakes and run from them with no direction. We'll run from them with no conviction. One of those ghosts traveling endlessly. Don't need no roads. In fact, they follow me, and we just go in circles. Well, now I'm told that this is life. Compromise, so we can get what we want out of it. Would someone care to classify a broken heart and twisted mind, so I can find someone to rely on and run to them, full speed ahead. Oh, you. Should not.